Date is November 21st, 2001. I am interviewing Andrew Hagopian at the Armenian Community Center. My name is Rance Oligus. This is Tape 1, Side A. And Andy, could you give me your full name, your date of birth, and your place of birth?
Andrew Hagopian, January 24th, 1923, born in Granite City.
Okay, I would like to start out, and could you describe for me what your family life was growing up in Lincoln Place and what your family life is like now?
Yes, of course my parents emigrated. My father came here in 1913 and stayed for 7 years working and saving money, and then he went back to Istanbul where he met my mother and they married and then came back. And of course they settled in Granite City because there was work here for people who were not familiar with the language and really had no financial means other than a job. And I had three sisters. I'm the oldest, and two of them have passed since, and there's only one youngest sister of mine left, and she lives in Detroit, Michigan. Our family life was all built around the family and around the community where we lived in Lincoln Place. We attended all the local schools, and we didn't have a church in our community at the time, so back in 1954, we were able to establish a church in the community, which was very vital to the maintenance of the community. My life, I graduated high school, and after about a year, I guess a year and a half, Uncle Sam called on me, so I went into service. And during that time, during the war, all the local people here were working and volunteering and doing everything they could to help the war effort. And I was very fortunate. I got into the Air Force and was commissioned as second lieutenant as a bombardier on a B-17 Flying Fortress. I served 3 years in the military. We flew 21 missions out of Italy into Austria, Yugoslavia, Germany, Northern Italy. And after my 21 missions were completed, why, the war ended, and fortunately I came back home. And after about 9 months of laying around doing nothing, I decided I better go to school. I went to Carbondale, Southern Illinois, and attended 1 year there. And then I transferred to the U of I in Champaign an additional 2 years, and I got a BS in marketing and accounting. And I graduated in 1949. Now I'm giving you my personal history here. Maybe that's not exactly what you want.
No, that's good.
And in 1949, I graduated the first part of June, and I got married in the middle of June to Angeline Manoogian, who was my first wife. Unfortunately, she is deceased. And I was very active in our local community. We had political organizations, and of course we had the church. Like I said, that was one of the main goals after I came back from service and school. Well, we started working on that in 1954. We did establish our first church in Lincoln Place. The Armenian community was a very close-knit community, and it was really enjoyable growing up in Lincoln Place because in the early years, in the 30s, we were set apart from the rest of the community. We were living on the wrong side of the tracks, so to speak. And so we hung together real well. And I stayed active community-wise. We started having bingos and rented facilities in Venice. And after about 3-4 years of that, well, we decided we were going to build this community center. We had purchased 5 acres of property out here. And so we built this community center. And with the thought that we need something that will produce revenue so we could build our new church, because we were occupying an old abandoned Bulgarian Orthodox church. We refurbished it and used it, what, 30 years? 30? Let's see, no, 40 years we used that church. 40, 44 actually, because in 98 we had accumulated enough interest and money to build the church on the same property that we had the community center. Okay, now let's go from there. What else did I miss?
Do you have any kids at all?
I have three sons, and like I mentioned earlier, my first wife, we were married for 25 years, and she passed, unfortunately, in 1973. And then in 1974, I remarried a young lady from Waukegan, Illinois, Annette Derbedrosian, and I've been married to her now for 27 years. And two of our sons are here, living in the area. One is in Edwardsville, one lives in Granite here. And the eldest of my sons is in Michigan. His wife was from Detroit, and so when the job opportunities here were not good for him, he moved up to Michigan, and he has three daughters. And my second son, Stephen, has two boys and a girl, and the third son, Jeffrey, has two girls. So that's my entire immediate family.
Okay. What kind of jobs did your parents hold, and what kind of jobs did you hold?
Well, my parents, they worked at the Commonwealth Steel Plant in Granite City. Like I said, being not conversant with the language originally, and not having the financial means to do anything else, they went to work at the steel plants, local steel plants. And my father worked in those plants until 1948. And then in 1948, he went into business in St. Louis, dry cleaning plant. And when I finished college in 49, he and I went into business together, and we operated that bit. My father retired in 58, and my one sister and I continued the operation until she married and went to Michigan. And then I operated until about 1985, and I retired.
And you take care of the community center here?
Oh, yeah. I work here harder than I worked for myself. But it's all voluntary. I enjoy doing it. I get a lot of satisfaction out of it, although it is hard work at times. But we're trying to get the church paid off, and that's our biggest project now. We're carrying about $193,000 mortgage on it right now, and we're working to liquidate that. And if I'm fortunate enough to live that long, we'll get that done.
What kind of types of recreation did you used to partake in, and what kinds do you do now?
Recreation wise, well, I forgot to mention, I had an Armenian band. We had ethnic dances, and we played for these dances, played the Armenian dances and songs that were necessary. Gee, there was basically three or four of us, Art Bedian, myself, Bob Parsagian, Sam Maradian, We had that band going until about, in the 60s, I guess, and then everybody got tired of it, so we abandoned that, but that was one of my recreational deals. Oh, yeah, I played softball and bowled and those kind of things. I did some golfing. So currently I'm not doing too much outside of working here.
I know you know a lot about the Turkish genocide against the Armenians. Would you like to say some stuff
about that? Sure, I'd be glad to address that. In 1915, well, actually, you know, they talk about from 1915 to 1921, but actually, where my parents were born, they started this thing way back in the 1890s. The original persecution of the Armenians started then. But the big genocide occurred when the war was on, everybody else was occupied with their problems, and so the Turks took advantage of that, and they drove our people off of the land they'd lived in for hundreds of years, took all their property, put them out in the desert, the ones they didn't kill right off the bat, drove them into the desert, and many of them perished walking through the desert as the Turks harassed them. It was a very meaningful event in our history, but it was all negative, of course. So Armenia is located in an Islamic world. We're the only Christian nation in the Asia Minor there, and we're surrounded by all these Muslim countries, okay? But we really never had any problems with the others except for the Turkish genocide. And to this day, the Turks are denying it. And unfortunately, Uncle Sam is beholden to them, and he's neglecting us and our history. And we've had promises from three recent presidents that they will recognize the genocide as it was because it's documented. And each of them reneged on their promise. So we don't have much faith in what the politicians say or do pertaining to the Armenian situation. Today, Uncle Sam is aligned firmly with Turkey. I can understand some of it, but you can't rewrite history and accept that rewritten history and keep your moral values. It just doesn't make sense. And we're constantly propagandizing the situation as it existed then, and it's constantly on our minds because I never knew any grandparents because they were not able to get over here, and they destroyed any records of the Armenian community in Turkey because Armenia was located in the eastern end of Turkey, okay? And we had terrific cities and communities there that were annihilated completely. Today, all that area is a vast no man's land. Some of the Kurdish people live there around there, but it's a downtrodden and empty area that the Turks are refusing to do anything to help even the people who are there now. They have destroyed many of our great architecture insofar as our churches are concerned, and they're continuing to do that. And unfortunately, the Turkish people aren't too bright. Before the genocide started, the architects, the artisans, the merchants, they were all Armenians. And I guess that didn't sit too well with them because they were not capable of doing the things that the Armenians were doing. So a very hostile attitude, and we'll maintain that attitude until justice is done. All Turkey has to do is admit that the genocide occurred because government records here in the U.S. of A. document it, you know. And we have to move on from there. Right now, they have blockaded Armenia along with Azerbaijan, and there is no land route into Armenia, and whatever we do, we have to fly in there. And with this blockade, you know, Uncle Sam just ignores it and caters to Turkey, because Turkey is a strategic ally in that area. And I can understand that, but you can't completely sell your soul to the devil. And that's what we've done as an American government.
I'm going to switch gears a little bit, and one of the reasons I'm doing this interview is because you were one of the members of the 1940 basketball team. I was wondering if you could describe a little bit what it was like playing on that team.
Well, we were very fortunate, those of us who were on that team, because we had a great leader, Andy Phillip, who went on to become a great basketball star, Hall of Famer, all the good things that could happen because of his capability. And on that team we had 10 persons, and the ethnic makeup of that team is interesting. We had 4 Armenians, and these are all from Lincoln Place, 4 Armenians, 1 Hungarian, 1 Macedonian, and 1 Yugoslavian. That's 7 of the members of that team were from Lincoln Place, and the starting 5 were all from Lincoln Place, and we had 3 reserves on that team beside the Armenians, Evie Miller, Ed Hoff, and Everett Daniels. So that made up our team, and it was coached by Byron Bozart, and his assistant coach was Leonard Davis. And Leonard was a school teacher, became an assistant coach there, and he later became mayor of Granite City and established a funeral home business here in the city. And his wife survives him to this day.
And what kind of role did you play for the team? What position did you play?
I was a guard. Andy Phillip and I were the guards. We had Ivan Parsagian and Dan Eftimov as the forwards, and George Gages was our center. Mm-hmm. And we were very fortunate. We made it was a cohesive team. There were no jealousies. Everybody worked as hard as they could, and fortunately we prevailed.
Mm-hmm. And what made the game different than it's played today?
Oh, vastly different. The pace of the game is much faster today. The capabilities of the athletes is outstanding. There's no doubt about that. And it's so fast, and played, a lot of us played above the rim, which was unheard of back then. As a matter of fact, you didn't really shoot a one-handed shot in that day. We were shooting two-handed shots. Now, you don't see that anymore. That's gone. We used to shoot our free throws underhanded, two hands underhanded. Well, you don't see that anymore. So the game has changed radically, you know.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of impact did the success of the team have on Lincoln Place?
Well, as I said earlier, we were on the wrong side of the tracks, and people were reluctant to cross the tracks and come down where we lived. And the basketball team in 1940 changed that situation drastically, and our community was not as isolated as it was before, and we had people coming down there then, and it helped eliminate the discriminatory aspects that we had experienced in the city.
I remember reading in your scrapbook about how there was 2,500 people greeting you, a mile long of cars, and you had dinners, a lot of dinners to go to after that.
Yes, we did experience that. When we got back Sunday morning, everybody was out at the high school here, and the bus brought us in there, and then a motorcade was formed, and we drove through town down to Lincoln Place, where we all lived, and had a big celebration down there. And we continued having reunions for our team. We had the 40th and the 50th, and each of the 40th, we had a community-wise, we blocked streets down there and at the community house, and we had a big celebration then. Incidentally, I got to mention that our community house, which was built by Commonwealth Steel for our people down there to use, and we had a lady who was a retired school teacher, Miss Sophia Prather, who did a lot of character building for us while we were down there. She was a short woman, about 5 foot tall, and she carried a stick around with her. And she kept everybody in line and kept that place operating with limited funds. So I think she deserves a mention here.
How has she affected your life personally?
Well, you know, we didn't have a church down there. And she ran a Sunday school, a non-denominational Sunday school. And some of the teachers were from some of the churches, like the Methodist Church and Presbyterian. Some of those women and men would come down and teach the Sunday school classes. And that was a great asset. And in the summertime, she'd have all kinds of programs to keep the kids occupied. We had a woodworking shop there in the basement for some of the older boys. And I remember building a birdhouse down there. And she was just a great influence. Unfortunately, she died in 1938, and before all of this basketball thing materialized.
And how did the perception of your team and the neighborhood change after you won that title?
Well, yeah, I just mentioned that we were not as isolated as we were before this happened. Okay?
Did you get more notoriety in the community?
Yes, of course. We got more recognition, and people started to reduce the tension between the wrong side and right side of the tracks. So that was a great asset in helping the community come together in that respect, the Granite City as a whole.
How has playing on that team affected your life?
Oh, definitely, definitely. It was a highlight of my life, to be honest with you. And we got certain recognition, you know, and we enjoyed it. And even to this day, there was a great event on November the 4th, a Sunday, I think it was, yeah, where a tribute to Andy Phillips was erected as a sign at the high school. Have you seen that sign?
Not yet.
Yeah, and on that sign, there were two fellas, Babe Champion and Gus Lignall, who started this project and brought it to fruition. They need to raise $40,000 to pay for it. I don't know whether they've got that amount, but they're getting near it. And it's a beautiful electronic sign, and you should, you know where the high school is?
Mm-hmm.
You should drive by there and take a look at it, because it's got a message board in the middle, okay? And then below that it says tribute to Andy Phillip and the 1940 basketball team, and the names of that team members are listed in smaller caps.
Mm-hmm. I'll drive by there and take a look at that.
Yeah, you should.
What are your thoughts on Andy Phillip and his overall career?
Well, he's a fantastic athlete. He not only excelled in basketball, but He even tried football and baseball. Matter of fact, he had signed a minor league contract with the baseball Cardinals. And I guess with his success in basketball, that became secondary, but he never pursued that to any great degree. He did play some minor league ball for him. And he was a big, gentle giant, good-natured, never got angry, was a great leader.
And what was it like for you to be named the most courageous player of the tournament?
That was dummy on my part. On our third game, in the final minutes, there was a loose ball and I dove for it and I separated my shoulder. So consequently, I didn't get to participate in the final game. And I think that really hurt the team because all year long we had been playing these five people. Well, when I dropped out, they had to bring in other people, and I don't know, it just didn't gel. That's why Andy came through. He made 15 points of the 24 points we scored that game, and that was another big leadership accomplishment on his part.
And how did you get the nickname of Huggy? I read that your nickname was Huggy.
Right. I had a neighbor, Chris Papadinoff was his name. He was older than me. And from Hugopian, he came up with the Huggy. And that stuck with me for the rest of my life. Even today, people I know call me that. Mm-hmm. So I accepted it.
I think that's about all I have. Is there anything you wanted to add?
Well, I think this is a great project you guys are doing. And other people have done this kind of a project on our community, but I don't think it's as elaborate as you guys are doing it, as thorough as you're doing it. And I think you guys deserve some credit.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Thank you.